We shift our attention now to Libya, where after the fall of Muammar Gaddafi 3.5 years ago, the country is now a tangled web of warring factions and armed militias. In Tripoli, government and rebel forces routinely fight in the streets. And in the east, al-Qaeda-linked rebel groups operate out of Benghazi and Darna, along with relatively newly arrived or branded groups attaching themselves to the self-described Islamic State. And it's in Darna where Islamic State militants released a video showing the beheading of 21 Egyptian Christians. Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has called for a United Nations-backed coalition to disarm the rebel militias and to keep arms out of the hands of extremists in Libya. Jeff D. Porter is the founder of North Africa Risk Consulting and an assistant professor with the Combating Terrorism Center at West Point. It's the rival factions in Libya, he says, that are furthering its demise.
A rough sketch divides Libya Dawn and Libya Dignity. On the one hand, Libya Dawn is aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood, with commercial factions from the city of Misrata, and is in control of one of Libya's governments in Tripoli. On the other side of the equation, you have Libya Dignity, which is allied with Libya's other government in the eastern city of Tobruk. Now, Libya Dignity is represented in the fight by General Khalifa Haftar. Haftar was a renegade general who may or may not be officially part of what is loosely termed the Libyan National Army. Now, where the jihadis fit into this equation is even more complicated. Now, on the one hand, you do have Islamists, particularly allied with the Muslim Brotherhood, fighting alongside Libya Dawn. But there is a difference between Islamists, like the Muslim Brotherhood, and jihadis, like the Islamic State. So the Islamic State is kind of a third wheel here in the fight. And what you're seeing take place is fighters allied with the Islamic State taking advantage of the larger fight between Dawn and Dignity and trying to insert themselves in the empty spaces.
So that when we see this horrific video of the murder of the Egyptian Christians on the beach outside of Tripoli by self-described Islamic State fighters, we should interpret that as an attempt by jihadist fighters in Libya to fill a vacuum that's created by this mess.
Yeah, that's entirely right. And it's actually, at risk of sounding too clinical in the face of what is obviously a horrific massacre, the model that the Islamic State in Libya is following is very similar to the model that it followed in Iraq and Syria, where you had a civil war that evolved into a proxy war, and the Islamic State is taking advantage of that chaos to carry out attacks, which will then serve as both a way of advancing its message, but also as a recruiting tool. You know, I think it's really important to underscore that awful video of the murder of the 21 Egyptians on the beach in Libya was designed not so much to send a message to Islamic State's antagonists and enemies, but also to send a message to potential supporters of the Islamic State, your potential fence sitters, and say the message is, get off the fence, join us, we are doing something.
And isn't there an ironic counter message, Jeff Porter, as well? I mean, the United States and NATO have famously been hands off over the last year, thinking there's nothing much they can do to untangle this mess in Libya. And doesn't the arrival or the appearance of the arrival of Islamic State give maybe the United States more impetus to get involved where a lot of people were asking them to get involved?
I think the answer to that is yes and no. On the one hand, I think there is a real concern about the emergence of an extremely violent jihadi group in Libya. But on the other hand, it's widely recognized that U.S. engagement is precisely what the Islamic State wants. I mean, in part, these attacks are designed to provoke the U.S. or the EU into a disproportionate response, which will then likely result in inadvertent casualties, which will then fuel the jihadi narrative of Muslims being persecuted by the West.
There is a troubling proxy aspect to this war as well. As you know, Jeff Porter, I was reading that some of our key allies in other fights around the Middle East are backing different sides in this war. Qatar and Turkey backing Libya Dawn, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates backing the other side. That's a problem for the United States when our allies in the fight against Islamic State are on opposite sides with their money and their arms here.
That's right. But I want to reiterate that there is a big difference between the groups that Turkey and Qatar are supporting, like the Muslim Brotherhood in Libya, and the Islamic State. They are not the same thing. And so while you're right in pointing out that we have different allies who are supporting different factions in the fight in Libya, I don't believe that either faction, Qatar or Turkey, is genuinely supporting the Islamic State. Now, you do raise a very good point, though, which is one of the ways to resolve the crisis in Libya is to start to talk to not just the different factions within Libya, but also the capitals from which they receive their external support, like Ankara or Doha, Riyadh, Abu Dhabi, or Cairo.
And what about General Haftar? He, we should point out, was a former close associate and sometimes it appears an employee of the CIA. Now, they say and he says they're no longer involved with one another at all. Is he someone that the United States should be talking to more closely?
Obviously, the United States should be talking to as many different stakeholders as possible. Now, there may be one way in which to do this that is just starting to evolve, which is that Libyan oil production, the source of Libya's revenue, has almost all but dried up. And that gives the United States increasing financial leverage, particularly if it's able to refreeze Libya's overseas assets. If you can stop the money flow to both parties, then maybe you can compel them to sit down and talk.
Jeff Porter, you know, I read some really troubling quotes, even from some of the academics, some of the civil society people in Libya who are trying really hard to draft a constitution, trying really hard to keep a House of Representatives together, people who appear to be Democrats, small d, have said that, yeah, we have to fight it out for a while, that actually a war is the best solution in the medium term because we're just not in a place where Libyans and these different factions can agree politically. They have to fight for a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, that may not necessarily be, you know, advocating a position or a policy, but it may just be an acknowledgement of reality. There are some conflicts where the fight will continue until the fighters on either side just get tired of fighting. Now, the role for, I think, the international community right now is, if that is in fact the case, what the international community can do is to prepare the political groundwork for when the factions do tire of fighting, and then there will be a framework for negotiations. So although the international community may not be able to gain much traction with the political and diplomatic process at this point, they can move towards a point in the future when the factions do tire of fighting and are ready to talk.
Jeff T. Porter is founder of North Africa Risk Consulting and assistant professor with the Combating Terrorism Center at West Point. Jeff Porter, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.